half my story right there. I'm glad I'm an alcoholic. And, man, there's a lot, there's enough people in here tonight to get real, real stupid. Take it easy. I want you to know, I want to thank Vicki and Christian for asking me to come out tonight. I really appreciate it. Come out here and share my experience with you about Alcoholics Anonymous and how it's worked in my life. You know, and I want to tell you, there's some people in here tonight that they know me really well, so I'm going to have to be very, very honest. And I'm a little nervous about that. I got to be honest, you know. And I'm a little nervous about that because my story's not pretty. It just isn't. You know, yeah, I'm a car salesman, bottom of the barrel. I was a hustler my whole life. It's a wonder that I am a car salesman. No education at all. I got zero education. I think I got past the 8th grade. I cheated to get into the United States Marine Corps, and I passed. You know, and I've never been honest through my whole life. There's always been some kink in my story. I've always had some dark past, planning for a dark future. And the funny thing is you people know what that's about. I'm in a room full of people that I love dearly and that I've grown to become part of. And it wasn't always the case with me. I never wanted what you guys had. Not really. I never really wanted to be an alcoholic. Way down deep inside, I wanted to be different. I wanted to control and enjoy my drinking. Way down deep. That innermost self. I couldn't admit that I was an alcoholic for many, many years. I'm not proud to say it, but my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was 1988. 1988. If you're sitting in this room right now, and it's been impossible for you to get it, I want you to know there's hope. Because I'm living proof of that today. I'm standing right here in front of you, sober. And I shouldn't be sober. You know, it talks about our stories disclosed in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. And what it used to be like for me was pretty bad. I didn't grow up in a nice neighborhood. I didn't grow up around a solid family structure. I was always looking for comfort in somebody else's family's home. I always felt distant. I always felt apart. Never a part of. When I was growing up as a kid, let me back up for a minute. I was born in Fort Worth, Texas. I don't know anything about Texas. Zero. My parents moved a lot. My dad was in the service. And we landed in Guadalupe, California in the year of 1962. I think I was about a year old. I don't remember it, but that's where I grew up. I know that's where I grew up because I fought my way every single day to the bus stop and back because I was the only white kid who had an afro in Guadalupe. In Guadalupe. And that stuck out like a sore thumb. I got to tell you. And it was fighting at the bus stop, fighting when I got home from school. And it was a constant battle just to be a Caucasian kid. Constant. And when my parents divorced and separated, we moved to beautiful downtown Santa Maria over off of the west side. And I grew up, and I went to school to Robert Bruce School. And that's where I started acting out crazy. As far back as I can remember as a child, I wouldn't go to class. I was disruptive in class. I pulled girls' hair. I push them down to get their attention. You know, I was mean, man. But they kept coming back for more, and I didn't have it. I swear, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. That's just the way I was, you know. And I grew up in a disruptive family, and my mom is a full-blown alcoholic. And they were separated when I was really young. Very, very young. And he never came around for many, many years. So I had abandonment issues as a child. Didn't know it. I know it now. I've worked through those issues because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I was able to get honest. And, you know, I couldn't get honest about any of that stuff as a child. I had been sexually molested several times by family members. And it was hard for me. I didn't want to look at that. You know? And I was a runaway. I ran away constantly. When I hit the age of about probably 7th and 8th grade, 13, 14 years old, somewhere around in that neighborhood, I ran away every week. They couldn't find me. I hooked up with a friend of mine from New York. He was older than me. He was about 16, 17 years old, and we went traveling all over the place. We hitchhiked everywhere. I learned how to panhandle. I learned how to make up stories to get money. You know, and I hung out with, let's say, the bottom of the barrel in Santa Barbara, sleeping on the beach at 15, 16 years old. You know, and I didn't know how to cope with my life. There's a lot of emptiness. And I didn't know that, you know. And my dad around that time came back into the picture. And he was angry because he had to deal with me now. But he was angry because my mom did such a bad job and he would blame that on me. So now I got self-esteem issues. Wonderful, right? That this is an alcoholic waiting to happen. And during that time, I was already starting to experience with weed. I was smoking pot. I was snorting shit. I don't know. Whatever they put in front of me. You know, if it made me feel different, I wanted more of it. And I had no idea until I started doing the work in Alcoholics Anonymous, all that stuff was connected. All that stuff was connected. You know, I don't know about anybody else. This is my story, you know. Some people get here and they stay here. They've had enough. They just stay here. And they do the work and they pave the way for guys like me who can't get it. Because I'm not ready to get honest about it. And I got to tell you, it was painful. I didn't graduate from high school at all. I had a job. I always had a job. When I wasn't running away from home, I got a job, part-time gig at a record store. And I loved it because we used to get high, sell records, and get high, and sell records, and get high, and sell records. That's what we did, you know. And when the time came for me to go into service, I had no academic skills, and I'd been running around for quite a bit of years, just kind of running away from home, doing my own thing, not really knowing where I was going in life, and sleeping under bridges, and wherever else I wanted to do. You know, my mom had, if I could be away from my family, she didn't care. When she saw me, she was like, "You're here? Really?" And when I joined the United States Marine Corps, the recruiter gave me a test. And he gave me a test, and it had all the answers on it. And I learned it. And I almost failed that son of a bitch. Being honest, man. There's no point not to be honest here tonight. Because you know what? If you're like me, it's hard to get honest. We don't end up here because life is full of surprises. Real good stuff happened. I don't believe that. I have the disease of alcoholism. I had to learn that. I fought that for years. I had a lot of this when I came in. Contempt prior to investigation. That's what I had. I looked at you people. I saw the way you did things. I looked at those steps. I could analyze little steps and go, I got it. I'm in. Let's go. No, I don't need a sponsor. I'm good. I don't need a sponsor. I read the book for what? This is easy. I just go to meetings and hang out. This is simple stuff. And then he gets uncomfortable, and I drink again. I can't even tell you. It would be crazy for me to go through all my relapses. You wouldn't even know. It's so many, I can't even count. I can't even count. You know, if you're a chronic relapser, my advice to you is to make it your last drink when you came in here a while ago. To make it your last use, your fix, whatever your deal is. Just stop. Stay stopped. Find a way to do something with it. Find a way to connect with other people. Get involved. People are here to help you. They helped me. When I came in this last time, I wasn't really ready. I didn't even plan on coming here at all. Zero. It was in the back part of my mind, even though I had been here before and I had gained some time. I had gained about 8 years of sobriety. And the first 5 years of that sobriety, I was just hanging out. I was doing the social bug. And I was just, chasing tail and bullshitting around. And I wasn't reading the book. But I was sober. And I thought I had something. You see, I didn't realize that in the end, I really didn't. I just had Glenn dry. That's what I had. I had a guy that was just running around dry. And my behavior became out of control. And I picked up again. I'll tell you what happened. This is a funny story. So I got hooked on gambling about year six. Okay, and I stopped coming to meetings and I didn't want to take a cake. And I was too good for you people now. Don't you realize that I don't need to be here? I don't need to be here. And what happened was I got hooked on gambling. I had a lot of money. I inherited a lot of money, man, in like 2002. It's just ridiculous how much money I inherited. And I had no idea how to use it. And I gambled it. I squandered it dry. Not drinking. Well, went to some strip clubs, but you know, that's besides the point. Sex is a part of my story. I'm sorry. I'm a sexual human being. And you know what? I'll talk about that a little bit. You know, I didn't realize I had intimacy issues until recently, until about a year ago. I didn't realize it. I had no clue that I had intimacy issues. And when I came in this last time, my friend Ted, who brought me here a couple of years prior, and I sat along that wall, hammered, drunk, and I didn't want to be here. And I called him. I don't even remember calling him. He tells me the story. He says, I called him, and I said, Ted, I can't stop drinking. He said, don't worry, man. Are you at home? I said, yeah. He goes, I'll come over, and I'll get you. And I thought we were going to go have some coffee and eat or something, right? He brought me here. I was... buzz. And I sat over here in this chair over here, and I was just gone. And when I left here, and I saw some faces that I had recognized, you know, and it stuck with me for a minute, but I just wasn't ready, and I kept coming around, kind of messing around a little bit here and there with sobriety. 20 days here, 30 days there, and I go out. Joe is my sponsor. He's been my sponsor for since the time I first came in this last time, for the last three and a half years, I guess. He's been my sponsor. And I get 20, 30 days. I call him. I have to pick up the 100-pound phone. Joe, you did, huh? Yes, I did. You know, and he'd say, you know, Glenn, I love you, man, but I guess you just got to do what you got to do. And at that time, my life was falling apart. Work was heavy. I was going into work. I was drinking all the time at work. You know, I'd get up early in the morning. My day kind of went like this. I got up early in the morning. I would crack open some whiskey, take a few shots, drink a couple of beers, and then I'd go to work and sell some cars. Right? just to feel good. You know, sell a car fixes everything, man. You're good. You sell a car, everything goes away. It's kind of a rush. It's that whole cycle of you know, negotiation and all that hunger in it. You know, it's an adrenaline rush, man. And so when I got here, I was bouncing around a little bit, and probably about the last several months, it started to get real tough for me. My liver was getting big. I was alone. I felt empty inside all the time. Nothing fixed me. Not selling a car. Not sexual activity. Not gambling. All the stuff that I had done over the years had caught up with me. Everything. You know, I had no back pocket plan. I was out of excuses. I couldn't use, I couldn't use all the things that I was using to keep myself in check to think that I had some kind of normality in my life. Everything was all used up. You know? And I went to the doctor. I had a couple of years prior to that, I had been through a couple of bouts of cancer and beat them both. Both were serious at first, but they went away quickly. You know, I was graced by God not to be able to go through the whole enchilada, as they call it, chemo and all that stuff. You know, I was graced that I had a surgery and it went away. Then it came back and I had another surgery and it went away. And not even that. Not the two DUIs that I got prior to that. Not the several women that I had in my life that I tore up from the ground up mentally. Not the gambling. Not the sexual institutions that I used to visit. At the corner of Hollywood and Vine at 4 in the morning. Yeah, I'm not proud of that. But let me tell you something. If you're in here and you're struggling with that, get honest about it. Surrender to it. Because it will take your life. It'll take you back out there. It did me, Malcolm. Remember Malcolm? Anybody remember Malcolm? Malcolm was my sponsor for a long time. And he used to tell me, that shit's going to take you out someday, dude. You keep screwing around like that, you're gonna end up drunk. I didn't want to believe it. No way, man. I got it going on. I got 6 years of sobriety, man. Who cares? I can handle this, and I got a lot of money, so I just keep paying for it. It didn't matter. There it is. And that ego and pride will kill you. It will kill you. It will take you down. And it did me. It took everything out of my life. And I'm sharing that tonight because when I walked in, I was having problems in my marriage. I wonder why. I was having a lot of problems in my marriage. And we raised our son together. We had a commitment with each other to raise our kid. But our marriage was falling apart. There was no intimacy. There was no talking. There was no cuddling. There was none of that. You know, love, hanging out, holding hands. There was none of that. Would you really want me to be in your life, women? Really? Come on, man. I was a time bomb. I took hostages. That's what I did. And you know, because I didn't know how to connect with women, I just used them. I just found the ones I could pay for and move on. Didn't matter. When I walked into my doctor and he was checking me for a recheck, he was checking my blood counts and he said, you know, hey, you're great. Everything's cool. You know, your cancer signs are down. Everything is good. It looks normal. But the one thing that really concerns me is your liver. He goes, man, your liver's really, really showing a lot of activity. Oh, really? Like, how bad, you know? Because I'm spitting up at this time, I'm spitting up yellow vomit in the morning because if I don't get a drink in me, it's going to hurt. That's how bad it got. And like I said, I ain't proud of the stuff that I get to talk about, but if it saves somebody in here tonight, then I'm doing my job. I'm doing my job. And so when he told me, he said, The normal liver is about 32 PP something I or whatever. I don't know the name. You know, it's about 32. He goes, yours is 586. He goes, let me describe it to you this way. I can take your liver, and he goes, I don't even know how it's still in you. It should be like, you know, bursting by now. He goes, I should be able to take your liver right now and squeeze it, and it's just like a big sponge, and all this liquid would come out. He goes, how much have you been drinking again? Because he knew I had a drinking problem a long time ago. Oh, not too much. Well, how much is not too much? Well, you know, pint here, pint there. Bottle here, bottle there. You know. He says, well, look, if you got a problem with alcohol, we have a clinical psychologist here. You know, and you're more than welcome to talk to him. And at that time, you know, I knew the gig was up, but I just wasn't, you know, I was just like holding on. Oh, please don't take away my alcohol. Then I got to really do some work. I really got to get inside alcohol. I knew the gig was up, and I knew what I had to do because I had been here before, and the people before me, I kept going in my head. It was coming to an end. My life cycle was over as I knew it. It was over, and I walked into that office, and I walked in there, and about 2 weeks later, and I sat down in front of this lady, and she says, well, Robert, because that's my first name, right? Robert. I don't go by that. I don't know why I like it. I just don't go by it. They call me Glenn Bob in Arkansas, but anyway. That's what happened. She said, why are you here? And I just started crying. I couldn't stop crying. Like, I finally just felt like something inside me just had enough, and I was crying. And she said, okay. Okay, we'll let it out. And then I'm like, well, I'm so sick of my life. Wah. You know, it's so empty. Wah. And my wife's going to leave me. I just know it. Wah. And she's like, okay. So after I told her all the things that I told you with the molestation and all the stuff that had been going on in my life, the runaway and the not owning up to my part and cheating and manipulating and all those things, once after several weeks went by, she said, don't you think it's a good idea you go back to those meetings? Oh, man, no, not Alcoholics Anonymous. Man, I'm really going to have to stay sober. And she's like, well, you're still drinking, right? And I said, well, yeah. Yeah, I'm still holding on. My life is over, but I'm holding on. She said, well, why don't you just go to a meeting? Just go and see what happens. All right, I'll go. And off I went. Called Joe up. Talked to Joe for a little bit. Went to a Tuesday night meeting. And I continued that behavior for a couple of weeks. You know, but something inside of me just wasn't feeling right. I knew the gig was up and I needed to get sober. I needed to start taking care of Glenn. Otherwise, I knew it was over. I had two bouts of cancer. My health was, you know, my liver was out of control. I'm holding on to all these great ideas that just aren't working anymore. And I called Daryl. A lot of you guys know Daryl. Been around a long time. I've known Daryl. He used to stop by my work. Him and Luke come by every 4 or 5 weeks. Hey, man, how you doing? How's it going? Still working for you? Yeah, no. Well, why are you still doing it? Must still be. That's how Daryl would pick me up in a car. He would take me for a test drive. He'd go drive around. He'd say, so why are you still doing it then if it ain't working for you? Ah, man, I get a salesman. He'll make me think. And he did. And I don't know what happened, but shortly after that, I called him again. It was September, like 28th or 29th. I was still drinking. I went to a meeting at Lion's Den, and I drank after the Lion's Den like I normally drink. And that morning, I woke up, and I was really hungover. And I normally don't get hungover. When you're like me, and you drink as much as me, and you need it to survive, guess what happens? You don't get hungover. It's your medicine. It's what you need to get by. And what happened was, I called him and he said, "Look, man, what do you want to do? Do you want to get sober?" I said, "I do." And the doc's telling me to taper off. He goes, "Taper off, bullshit. Do you need to go to detox?" I said, "Right now, I can't afford it. I'm a commissioned salesman. I don't sell, I don't get paid, and I don't have money to go to detox, and this isn't going to work out." And he goes, "Do you want to stay sober?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Okay. Don't drink today and call me every 3 or 4 hours." He goes, it's going to get hard. You're going to feel like shit." He was right. He goes, "But don't pick up no matter what, and you're going to feel better. And you're going to call me every day." And I did that for about a week. And I had to work the whole weekend. And I'm selling car after car. I'm on a roll. And I'm going to the bathroom. And I'm crapping. And I'm going back out. And I'm sweating. And I'm detoxing while I'm working. See, that's the kind of guy I am. Everything, it doesn't matter. Don't you get it? I got to have some shred of control here. Shit, I'm not giving that up. I should have took off for 2 weeks, but I didn't do it. I didn't do it. And I made it through the week, and I was so proud of myself and getting ready to go back into therapy. And I'm going to tell her I'm sober, man. And she's going to like, "What?" Because doctors are a trip. See, they don't really get alcoholism. I'm going to tell you right now. This gal, this therapist, she's a good therapist. She keeps me solid and founded. She really does. Makes me do a lot of writing. Between the writing I had to do with her and the writing I had to do with this guy, it's no wonder I'm sober. It is. I've done the work. You know? I've done a lot of writing this year, man. I had to go inside deep. You know? And I went in and I told her, I said, "I am sober for a week," and she floored. She floored her. Said, "What? Are you okay? Do you need medicine?" She was like freaking out. You know? I said, "No, man. I'm good." You know, she goes, "How do you feel?" I go, "Better now. I just lost 20 pounds. You know? And that's where my journey started. That's where it started. You know, I don't have time to go on through the whole drug log. You know, I did a whole drug thing in the 80s. It was miserable. But you know what? The point is this. In chapter 5, it says, "Rarely have we seen a person thoroughly follow this path," right? I didn't thoroughly follow the path. I didn't want nothing to do with you guys. Follow what path? I had my own game all the time. I was hustler. I was living life. Don't you get it? I can survive on my own. And when I talked to my therapist about it, she said, "You know what?" I said, "What do you think of me?" That's what I asked her. I remember about 2 months later, I said, "What do you think of me? I want your honest opinion. Just tell me. Don't sugarcoat it." And she looked at me and she said, "All right. I'll tell you. Can you have that?" I said, "Yeah, I can. Just tell me, you know? Be careful what you ask for." And she said, "Well, let me tell you, this is how it is. What I see is an immature man who doesn't have any coping skills at all. He doesn't know himself. He doesn't know how to live. And it blows me away that you're still alive." And I was like, I don't want to come here anymore. Leave me alone. And you know what, though? Thank God. Thank God. See, what I'm trying to tell you, we don't know the series of lives that are going to happen in our life. We don't know. Sometimes we get cancer. Sometimes things come up. We don't know. But for those series of events to happen, I ran into a guy who cared enough about me to refer me to a psychologist, who cared enough about me to tell me the truth. Because I wasn't feeling the truth in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to tell you. I always felt better then. I don't know why. But I always thought I was better then. Because nobody ever told me anything. They just let me do anything I wanted to do. Because you know why? They couldn't get through to me. I kept that shield up.
Yeah.
You can't tell me much. I know everything. Don't you know I'm still alive? So when she told me that, it was time to get busy. It was time to get to work. And about that time, so my sobriety date wasn't long ago. So my sobriety date was October 1st of 2015 was my last. My last drink was that night of the 30th of September. And it was time to get busy. And about 3 weeks later, my wife came to me and says, "You know what? I'm leaving you. I'm out. Brandon just went to college. My two cats died. she left me. It was brutal, man. I was all alone. And I was scared. And the men in this program have showed me how to live. Because I got honest and I chased sobriety. I didn't wait for it to come to me. I trip out on that. You know, I used to hear this all the time. This is not a bench-warming program, right? Shut up. You must be talking about me, because I'm the only one in the room that's bench-warming right now. It's not. Get busy. Get busy, man. You know, when I went to Joe and we started working through the steps, and I started doing the steps, I would do the steps with Joe, believe it or not, and then I'd go and talk to my counselor. See, I didn't go to my counselor and then go back to Joe. I went to Joe, Joe helped me, and I go to my counselor, because this program has worked for a lot of guys before me who had a lot worse stories than me, and I believed in that. I just didn't want to see it, but I believed in it. I didn't know what was going to take me. I had no clue about it. I didn't know anything. And at the first time in my life, everything around me that didn't work, I surrendered to it. I was in surrender. Finally, after all these years, after 30 friggin' years of coming in and out, doing the game, it was over. The gig was up. And I started getting busy. And you don't have to wait that long, man. If you're in here and you're young, get busy now. You got your whole life ahead of you, man. Don't wait for it. Go get it. If you're old and you're just getting here, guess what? There's hope. Shit. If I could do it, if a guy like me can do it, anybody can do it, man. You know, we just got to want it bad enough. I had to want it bad enough. And when I started working the steps with Joe, something started happening to me. I started being aware. I didn't feel very good. I got to tell you, the first 6 months was a big emotional roller coaster for me. I had all these emotions. My wife wasn't coming back. You know, 32 days in sobriety, I grabbed Victor. Victor, I really want to go fishing, right? And he had taken me before, and I said, Victor, just take me fishing, man. I want to sit by the river. I want to pray. I'm going to, you know, and I was brokenhearted. I was brokenhearted, you know, and in every way, not just because my wife left me, but because I couldn't stand Glenn anymore. And I was broken. And he took me fishing. And we're out there, it's been like the second day, and we're fishing. We ain't catching shit, man. It's just dead. We ain't catching nothing. And I'm about ready to bust out a tear, man. And he looks, he's down the river, he looks at me and says, you all right? Hey, man, it hurts, you know? And he's like, hey, get your light in the water, it'll be all right. Don't worry about it. Because what he was telling me is my feelings will pass. And they have. Doesn't matter how I feel. It matters what I do. And I didn't know that. I didn't matter how I felt. Don't just look at me. I want to feel good. You know, Joe had told me early on, he says, you know, it's funny how alcoholic minds think. If we're treated average, we feel less than. If they treat us above average, we feel average. And if they don't pay attention to us, we scream, rant, and rave until you do. I threw that in there. He didn't tell me that, but it's true. Hey, I'm serious. Look at me now, really. You know, it's been a wild year, man. When I was with my ex-wife for 23 years, we built a home. I thought we had a solid foundation, but what we lacked was intimacy. We lacked being friends. We lacked honesty. And it killed my marriage. It just killed it. Alcohol killed it too. Don't get me wrong. It did. Alcoholism is a family disease. And if you don't think you're affecting the people that are around you, you are. My son, who loves me to death right now, we have a great relationship, but in the years of around 13 to around 20, He wouldn't talk to me that much. And it was because of my drinking. He didn't have time for anybody. You're in my way. I'll be here for, here's some money. You want some money? Here. Here's some money. You know, I have an older boy. I have a marriage that didn't last. And I have an older boy who's 28 years old. I do not have a relationship with him today. It kills me. Zero. You know, and I'm not the only one. I've heard stories in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I don't feel alone in that department. You know, I don't know how to connect that. At some point in my life, in my sobriety, I'm sure God will put it in front of me. And I'll have to face that. Because that's what we do here. We get to do those same things, you know. I talked about that intimacy issue. I'm working on that today. I'm getting to know women in a whole new light, man. You know, I can talk to them. And not take advantage of the situation that's in front of me, but really be honest with them. And with nothing in return. Never thought I'd say that out loud in front of a bunch of people. But it's true. God is working miracles in my life. He is stripping me from the old Glenn and transforming me into something else. I heard on a speaker tape one time, I love listening to Bob Dirrell. If you ever want to listen to a really good speaker and he just breaks, he can take a sentence and break down for a whole hour. Anybody here Bob Dirrell fans? Bob Dirrell? Okay. You know what I'm talking about. And he says, in the third step prayer, when it says, God, I offer myself to thee to do with me and to build with me as thou wilt. Careful what you pray for. Careful what you pray for. Because what happens is he'll reveal it to you. And if you're not ready to seek it, you won't find it. You'll still do the same old song and dance in here. I did it for years. Now I'm seeking. I'm asking. I'm seeking. I'm wanting to know how to get Glenn back up. How to be a better Glenn than I've ever been. How to be a good future boyfriend / whatever to somebody else. How to be a better person. That's what these steps teach me today. I'm not perfect. This is a school of hard knocks, man. It is. It's been a school of hard knocks for me. It has not come easy. Traveling through this path with some of the brothers that have kept me sober, Mike has texted me every single day since I got here. In the morning, 5 days a week. You don't text me on the weekends. I don't know what that's about. No love on the weekends. You're in love. But Monday through Friday, every morning, either he beats me most of the time at 6:30 in the morning, or I'm beating him. Good morning. And we don't go into how you're doing today. It's just good morning. And I didn't know what to think when he first started doing that. What's that guy left for me? And you know, women in here, Jessica, you know, I love you, man. You've been a sister. You know, Cindy, you know, Katie, my buddy Jesse over there. There's so many of you that have been. If you broke bread with me, if you had spent time with me outside of these rooms, you have inspired me one way or the other to stay sober. You have given me a gift today that I can't even repay. I never used to know what that was, but now that I'm seeking, right? I'm seeking what does he want Glenn to do to get better so he can recover from a hopeless state of mind and body? Because I don't think right. I don't do right. My first thought is always kinky. Always. Not sexually. What's wrong with you people? It's not. You know, my first thought is it's always when I project. I was told this by my sponsor, and I live it sometimes today. When I project, I always go in negative. You know, I never knew what one day at a time was. I never knew what keep coming back really meant. You know, the one day at a time thing is something that I have to do every day. I don't do step one and I'm done with step one. I've learned. That's not the case. Believe me. I had done step one how many times with you in 2 or 3 years? 4 times? How many four steps? Three of them? And I got honest through all that, but I just wasn't ready. See, because the innermost self thing, the deep down thing, I get it now. That colorful imagination, that's my sickness. Because it's a threefold disease. Spiritual, mental, and physical. I didn't know that was my problem. That if I don't stay connected with you people and I don't do something every day for my sobriety, I will be disconnected. And I've done it because I have gone out. I can tell you this. You know how many times I've had 1 year? I don't know. Could have been five, could have been six. I don't know. In my late 20s with that cocaine addiction, it was horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible. I'll come in here with blisters on my lips and all sucked up and it's horrible. You know? I don't wish that on anybody, man. You know, being a service is something that I'm really trying to do today. And I do it because I'm told to do it. It will save my life. And you know what? It's been my experience. It has. You know, I'm working with a new guy right now. He reminds me 25 years ago what I used to be like. You know? And he's good for me. God put the right guy in my life. You know? I have close friends today that I shared time with outside of these rooms. We have pie. I've never eaten so much damn pie. It's so pregnant, man. And you know what? I'm going to have some more pie tonight. Because that's what we do. That's how we celebrate. We connect. We get honest. We work through issues. We talk to each other on a daily basis. We find friendships, real bonding, not false bonding. You don't want nothing from me. I don't want nothing from you. We share something on a common ground. Sick ass people. Yeah. We're not always sick on the same day, though. And that's why it works. One alcoholic talking to another. You know? I never worked a program before, and I work it today. I work it because my life depends on it. You know? It's not fun. It's not fun having to secure this peculiar mental twist throughout the day with God. But it's the only way I know how. I don't know how to not to do that. You know, I still get into self, but I just don't know me. I can get out of self. So you taught me how to get out of self. You know, I can still be jealous, but I just don't carry it too long. I let it go quickly. You know, I can still have fear, but it doesn't own me today. I can ask for help and talk about the things that I'm fearful of. You know, and I got to tell you, man, Alcoholics Anonymous is the best thing that has ever happened to me. It's helping me grow up. It's helping me find a God of my own understanding that I really don't really understand, but I'm finding some way to connect with that through the day. When I get up in the morning, I pray for another day of sobriety. I thank Him for another day of sobriety. I ask God to reveal to me how I can help others that day. And then when the opportunity arises, I run sometimes. That's what I do. I don't want to do that. No, not that one. Oh, no. It's the truth. But I don't do that for very long. It's a way out. You know, all my life I look for a connection, a way out. All my life. And I have found it here in Alcoholics Anonymous. There is no other place for me. Some people go to church, which is cool. I got nothing against church. You know, I found God in church too. You know, God is where you go and how you take it, how you vision it. You know, that for me, that's my experience. And I love that you people are here tonight, my closest friends, the ones that I roll with on a regular basis, who teach me how to do this one day at a time. So the people that are in front of me, I thank you. And the people that are behind me that come in and show me what it's like out there and we connect to, I thank you. And I want to thank you all for being here tonight and being a part of my sobriety.